the rebelling workers were sealed in from below by nearly 1,000 men, and from above by machine gun mounted helicopters. It was only a matter of time. And this time, Kilov would make sure that Roxen wouldn't live again to repeat his heroics. He rubbed the painful wound on his cheek.
Send in more flamethrower units and have the helicopters start dropping that nausea gas from up top. We're going to squeeze these rebels until they bleed.
Copy that.
Roxen and his army of nearly 1,000 freed American prisoners fought on for hours, somehow holding back the overwhelming strength of the Reds. Another 340 of his men were killed or wounded. Rock knew it was only a matter of minutes before the choppers overhead would land or drop bombs or something unpleasant. It was over. But he couldn't tell them. He hadn't lied to them and said it was going to be easy. Yet somehow he felt guilty. He had led them into the lion's den. And Kim. He turned to look at her across the floor, shooting down the hallway. She, too, had turned into a warrior over the last few hours.
What was that?
They're starting to drop bombs from the helicopters. Everybody listen! I know you've all fought hard today. I told you you would be free. Well, you are. Free to die as free men. I'm proud to be among men like you. You've proved yourselves Americans as tough as any free fighter out there.
Rock walked over to Kim and put his arms around her.
Baby, I'm only sorry that you're gonna...
I'm with you. And believe it or not, Rock, that's all I want.
Hey, what's that?
That's gas. Everybody hold your breaths.
What was that out the window?
That was half a helicopter. What the hell? The helicopters are blowing up.
Rock, where are you going?
Up to the roof. Hold your positions.
Rock tore up the metal stairs to the roof. Above him was a battle of the skies that hadn't been witnessed for over a century. About 100 feet up and spread out over nearly half a square mile were nearly 30 Red helicopters. But half of them were already in flames and falling from the sky. In the distance, nearly a mile away, Roxen saw a single chopper speeding in a zigzag pattern, firing a beam of pure black energy. Suddenly, the Doomsday Warrior knew. The Rock Squad had taken the MS-40 from a Stalinville mission and a particle beam, probably against Schechter's orders. Rock smiled broadly. Every helicopter the particle beam touched, even briefly, imploded into a ball of white fire and dropped in shards of glowing metal, twisted beyond recognition. The last 5 helicopters fled like bats out of hell. The stolen Red helicopter soared in at 200 miles per hour and stopped on a dime over the concrete rooftop. Rock ran to greet his rescuers. Out popped Detroit, followed closely by McCoughlin, Chen, Perkins, and Archer.
Man, am I glad to see you guys.
Heard you were having a party, Rock, so we brought the candles. Schechter's probably screaming up a storm, but...
Just in time. The goddamn Reds are nipping at our toes in there.
Detroit held one of the particle beam weapons, Perkins the other.
Want to give it the honors?
With pleasure, Perkins. Looks like the technicians are about to save my ass once again.
He headed toward the stairwell, making his way through the milling released prisoners.
We're going back down now, men. And this time, we're not coming up again.
Rock, how do you think we're gonna...
You'll see. Kim?
Yes?
I'd like to introduce you to Detroit.
Kim?
McCoughlin.
A pleasure.
Chen?
Hello, Kim.
Archer? And Perkins.
You seem familiar. Kim...
Yes, Kim Langford.
You're the daughter of...
I know, Perkins. But right now, we've got to get out of here. And we need to keep her safe.
They all could see how Roxen's eyes glowed when he was near her. So he had finally fallen.
We'll keep her safe, Rock.
Rock headed down the 40th floor fire stairs.
Hold up. They're a floor below us.
You sure?
Yeah. I can feel it.
You can feel it?
Set your beams for the widest possible dispersion. We won't have time to aim, and we only need to knock them out, not kill them.
We don't need to kill Reds?
Just wait until we get a clear shot from the outside.
I'll cover you from the roof. Good luck.
You too.
He took a deep breath, and with the workers crowding behind him, he headed down. Taking cover behind a pile of debris, Roxon peeked out at the group of waiting Red flamethrowers. If they fired, he wouldn't have a chance. The Red troops crumbled to the floor.
Come on, let's go!
Rock tore down the stairs, his finger on the trigger of the 3-foot-long, nearly cylindrical plastic rifle. The troops fell like ducks in a shooting gallery. The troops below didn't even know what was happening to their advance forces. Just a strange quiet which slowly descended down through the building as the Free Fighter came down. The Reds fell by the hundreds, collapsing onto the stairs, their rifles clattering to the floor. Not a Russian could withstand the power of the futuristic weapon. Slowly, floor by floor, Roxon took out the attack force. From the roof of the 40-story brainwashing building, Detroit sighted the troops' barracks. He put the black beam on maximum power, 6-inch wide beam. The rifle positively quivered with energy, more powerful than that of an atomic bomb. Anything the ray touched would instantly explode into its component atoms.
Hey, Chin.
Yes, Green.
Can your fancy martial arts do this?
Detroit, I know they can.
And see that tank over there? Look at that, there's not even anything left.
Detroit continued, sighting the munitions warehouse. A row of tanks. Officers' bunkers. Pavlov City turned to flames, courtesy of Detroit Green. His giddy grin turned to a cold smile.
Open the door, fools! Drive! Drive!
The convoy of KGB bigwigs tore out of Pavlov City, leaving the remainder of their force to face Roxon and his army of workers. Kirilov shook with fury inside the staff car.
Those cursed beam weapons! I had him!
Yes, sir.
Who is this?
Lieutenant Shirovsky. Who
is... This is Colonel Kirilov. I am leaving Pavlov City. Get General Manislav on the scrambler and have him ready a bomber jet loaded with 2 neutron bombs. I want the target to be Pavlov City, dead center. Use the large building as ground zero. When I am airborne, I call you back and give the order to drop. Is that clear?
We absolutely, sir. Order received and carried out.
Faster, driver!
The convoy of white-faced KGB men sped towards the airport, leaving behind hundreds of their own to face the bomb. Behind them, the black beams continued to slice apart what little remained of Pavlov City that wasn't yet burning. Within an hour, Rock and his small army of American workers had fought their way to the edge of the city. With the particle beam at his command, the Reds had all fallen like flies. Detroit, Chen, and Archer kept up the attack from the roof and arranged to rendezvous with Roxon at a small hill just to the north of the city. Rock led the now 700-man force up the steep slope of the first of a series of hills that surrounded the open plain on which Pavlov City had been built. The men all stopped at the top and turned to look at the damage that had been wrought. Pavlov City had been reduced to smoking rubble. Everywhere were fires roaring high into the sky, billowing clouds of thick smoke from the burning wooden barracks. Never had the men felt such emotions, emotions of victory. They turned to Roxen with worship in their eyes. The Roxen had saved them. Everything they had ever dreamed about the mythical Free Fighter was true. Rock prepared to address them, Kim at his side. Perkins and McCoughlin stood proudly in the throng.
Fellow Americans, you are now Free Fighters. You have earned the right to call yourselves such by your courage and heroism under fire. I have been in many battles. This was your first. I remember the fear I felt the first time. You faced death in the eye and have walked out the other side. I bow to you all.
Roxen lowered his head in a gesture of respect, one of the few times in his life he had ever lowered his eyes to another.
What now, Roxen? Where will you take us?
Now? I take you nowhere. You are all free men now. You can no longer return to the fortress cities of the Reds. You are now criminals in their eyes. You must survive. Make your way to the different free cities. Start your own. You are all tough men. You showed that down there. And you have helped strike a vital blow against the Russians. Go into the mountains, into the plains. Build shelters for yourselves. Learn to live in the land that is yours. Go now. It's a harsh world out there, but it's your world. Our world. Good luck, and God be with you.
The workers drew strength from Roxen's words. They broke up into small groups of 30 to 50 men each, divided up their weapons, and headed off under the darkening sky, filled to the very clouds with the towering funnels of smoke from the doomed city. Rock watched them go. Many would die, but some would live, and their children would live to see their land free once again. This he knew deep in his heart. At last, he turned to Kim, Perkins, and McCoughlin.
Come on, we've got to hitch a ride with Detroit and the others. They're supposed to meet us up that hill about a mile away.
The four of them headed off along the rocky slopes, turning their heads away from the flaming city in an attempt to avoid breathing the acrid smoke. They had scarcely gone 100 yards when Rock stopped them.
Shit, I hear something. We've got to run.
Rock?
Run directly away from the city, as fast as you can.
What's going on, Rock?
I heard a plane. I think our friend Kilov has decided to get rid of us by taking out the whole damn city. Kilov's gonna kill everyone in the whole area. Even his own troops to get us.
They tore over the top of the hill and headed down the opposite slope. Rock stopped for a moment just before heading down to see if he could get a shot with the particle beam, which he carried slung over his shoulder. But though he could hear the whine of the jet engine, the smoke and low purple and brown clouds camouflaged the bomber.
They're almost there! Run!
The three Free Fighters and Kim ran and slid and rolled down the rock-strewn side of the mountain. If they could just get enough distance and another large hill between them and the detonation, they might, just might, survive. They had just reached the bottom and were heading into a long swampy marshland with 10-foot-high reeds when it hit.
Get down!
The slowly rising mushroom cloud dwarfed all the other fires and funnels of smoke. Rock prayed silently that Detroit, Chen, Archer, and the freed workers had had enough time to get behind some sort of cover.
Is it over?
The shockwaves are still coming. Okay, we're good. Everybody okay?
Yeah.
I'm okay. Was that...
Neutron bomb, probably. Come on, people, let's...
The blast that had knocked them to the ground and into unconsciousness slowly coalesced into the second mushroom cloud. While they lay in merciful darkness in the high reeds, every bit of living matter that the heat and radiation made contact with melted into dripping black sludge. Whatever had been alive within range of the blast was now dead and returned to the dust from which it had risen. They awoke hours later, mouths dry as parched sand. Rock was the first to totally come to.
What the hell hit us? Shit.
The mushroom clouds still hung high in the sky. The dark chimneys of gray and black smoke stared down as if surveying the total destruction they had caused. Rock leaned over quickly to check Kim. She seemed all right, no burns on her skin. The same for McCoughlin, but Perkins was clammy and breathing shallow breaths.
Come on, Perkins, get up.
What happened?
There was another blast. Perkins, your eyes are swollen and red. Can you see me?
Yeah, I can see you. I guess I must have glanced at the blast, huh?
Rock helped him to wash out his pupils with water from his canteen, and as soon as possible, they started off in the orange glow.
We've got to get away from this area. The radiation will linger for days, and fallout from the debris picked up by the blast will start coming down within hours. We'll head straight south. Away from the city before we start west again.
They headed out through the reeds of the swamp, moving slowly at first, as they all felt somewhat dizzy from the blast. But within a few minutes, they seemed to pick up a good pace. They reached the next set of hills at the other end of the mile-long swamp and climbed the easy slope. They passed the summit, a long flat meadow with the flowers burned to a crisp from the blasts.
Oh God! Rock! Rock!
What?
Kim pointed down with one hand, holding the other over her mouth. Five bodies, or what were barely recognizable as bodies, lay on the ground, frozen in time and space. Their flesh had turned to charcoal black as midnight, their hands and arms held up, bent at odd angles. But their faces were the true horror. Eyes burned away so that just black holes stared out. Lips, thin pieces of dark leather with the teeth still shiny, grinning in their death screams. Five of the freed workers, making their way to a new freedom, caught at the top of a hill when the bombs went off. They hadn't even had time to run a single step. Cut down by the heat of the first bomb, they looked like statues made of black dust, sculpted by death, bound for hell. Rock put his arms around Kim and pulled her away. She seemed transfixed. Her eyes terrified by the vision, yet unable to look away.
Kim, you can't dwell on it. Death is part of our world.
Oh, God.
It's okay, Kim. Cry. It's good. Tears heal. It's okay.
They walked for days, barely able to stand at times, hiding in the woods and caves from time to time as red drones flew overhead. Kilov must have been sending them out by the droves, searching for any possible survivors from his atomic massacre of Pavlov City. Kim and the two free fighters were holding up well, though Perkins' eyes still seemed to be giving him trouble. They had turned a pinkish color, and he constantly had to drip water on them to keep them from drying out. They had to get back to Century City and fast. They all needed medical treatment. On the third day, they began heading west, as Roxon figured they had come far enough south to avoid the major search-and-destroy effort of the Reds. He had never been through this stretch of land, and the plant life grew increasingly peculiar, with fields of large cactus-like growths, bright yellow and nearly 20 feet high.
Hold up.
Yeah?
The largest cacti has bright red fruits. Let's see.
Rock, what if they're bad?
I'll only have a little to test.
Rock's a mutant, Kim. He can take a lot more than most. Well?
They're delicious.
They ate a little of the fruit and waited a few hours to see if any deleterious effects occurred.
I'm not feeling anything. You?
Nope. They're good to eat.
Hungry as dogs, they pulled down dozens of the grapefruit-sized fruits and ate until they were stuffed. The first good meal they had had in nearly 5 days. Feeling somewhat better, they headed off into the gathering sunset, a panorama of rippling green and purple waves as the radioactive layers high in the Earth's atmosphere danced under the stars.